coming to you live from the Cross Country Mortgage Campus in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Here are your hosts, Bo Bishop and Nathan Zagura.
All right, let's do it live on a Monday edition of Cleveland Browns Daily. Merely Bo, and joined by the voice, the great Jim Donovan, here with me in studio. How are you, sir? How are the ponies, most especially?
I am good. I was with them earlier this morning. It is a good day to be a horse, and especially a horse at the Donovan Ranch.
We get nice good oats. Do we get nice look good hay? How do we look?
No, we have beautiful. We have beautiful pastures. I have to say, we have beautiful pastures, and so you know, we have beautiful blankets. So I mean, they go out, they come back in, and they're well treated. It's a good day.
That's a good day.
They have runouts once they get in.
Yeah, a lot of wins.
It's like a JW Marriott there.
It really is out there at the Donovan Ranch. It is great to see you, sir. Look, this is a pretty wild thing in that. You have free agency starting officially on Wednesday at 4 o'clock.
Right.
But the business is happening, and the business has been happening all weekend. We were involved in some business reportedly. I'm just going to put one blanket reportedly out right now.
Everything is reported.
Everything that we are going to talk about is reportedly. You can pretty much use replace. This is me. You can replace reportedly and ignore it the rest of the way, because this is what's happening in the league. Because this is stuff that's coming from agents, right? And so it's an awkward spot for us, but it's all reportedly. But there aren't many instances where a reportedly doesn't end up being factually by Wednesday at 4.
No. It's a lot of fun.
It's pure joy.
Once again, it's the NFL becoming a 365-day-a-year news cycle.
Yeah.
I mean, really, they might take a week off. Maybe not. But, I mean, they might take a week off. But then all of a sudden, right after a Super Bowl, which now is in February,
yep.
I mean, you're in Indianapolis, as you and Nathan were, yep. And you're down at the Combine. And then this date hits, and this is when it really gets rolling. And then the next thing you know, guys are coming in for the off-season conditioning program, and the camp segment begins.
It's
just amazing.
It is. Our business, the power of television, something that you've been in most of your life, I was in most of mine, we set the calendar, and the NFL, when it launched the NFL Network, was pretty smart to say, hey, let's find a way to make sure we have some programming here.
Right. Yeah.
So these things weren't a big deal 15 years ago. You wouldn't have had this day in March. You wouldn't have had the Combine play out the way that the Combines right. played out. But because you have a network to feed – then it's nice if you can have a 365 business. And this is the most popular sport in this country by 1,000 miles. Its feeder system is now second. College football has now become the second most popular sport in this country.
I agree.
From a rating standpoint. So not only is it the most powerful, but its feeder system is the second most powerful.
Bo, I have to tell you, back in 1999,
yep.
when the Browns were coming back and they had boatloads of money to spend on guys to come in and make up, you know, which was a very, very lean roster. But at that time, I used to sit outside the Blue Point restaurant in between 7 and just before 11 o'clock so I could get yeah. back and do the 11 o'clock sports on television. We would sit on a corner, me and a camera guy,
yeah.
and it was cold. And we would sit there because the Browns would bring in their free agent candidates,
sure.
and they would eat always at the corner table, because the corner table was the best table for all of our listeners who have been to the Blue Point, because you can look up and see the terminal tower there, and it is rather picturesque, okay?
Yeah.
But we would sit there, and all of a sudden, there's Lomas Brown. Hey,
yeah.
as soon as Lomas would finish his huge meal, he would walk outside, and we would pop him with an interview, and it was really, those were the days that you really had to chase down free agency. Nice. You don't have to do that.
No.
As it just comes across and it flows like you turn on a faucet and it just pours out. But I can remember those long nights outside the Blue Point, to the point where the Blue Point would send a meal out to me and the camera guy, because they realized that we were doing a lot of business, and they were getting a lot of business because people then, because we were down there and saying, hey, the Browns are down at the Blue Point tonight. The next thing, you couldn't get a reservation down at the Blue Point. It was a lot of fun.
those were days.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough early in my career to experience some of those, where there really was truly an aspect of the local people, you could break those type of stories.
Absolutely.
Now it's all done through a handful of national people at the very highest level. We still have some stuff. Mary Kay does a good job. Tone does some good job. You still see some stuff getting broken locally. But most of this stuff is happening at the league level. Yeah. It's happening with Schefter. It's happening with Pelissero. It's happening with Rappaport. From the NFL perspective, there's a couple of guys in the other sports that do all the breaking in those sports. It's usually agent-driven or it's owner-driven. It's put out on social, and everybody sees it instantly.
Yeah.
And in those days, we could break something. I remember we wanted to beat the newspaper.
Yeah,
like, if we could get it on at 11
absolutely.
Before the newspaper dropped the next day, then we won if we could do that. But if you didn't, then it's over.
You know, I have another pretty good story that hits home because you know the Columbus market very well, but it involved Chris Spielman.
Mm-hmm.
So the Browns were coming back into the league in 1999, okay? And so I think any veteran out there in the NFL realized that the Browns had a lot of money. Now, could you put up with an expansion roster? That had to be a personal decision. Chris Spielman was at a point in his career at that time where he was probably coming to the end of his career, but maybe one more payday. So a guy from Columbus at WCMH, his name was Scott Duff. He was a producer down there, and we were in connection with them. We would trade a lot of interviews. We'd get Ohio State. We would give them, you know, Cavs or Browns. He called us up and said, hey, I was just at a banquet down here in Columbus, and Chris Spielman was there, and he said, boy, I'd like to play for the Cleveland Browns. He sent the interview up to us.
Yeah.
We led not just the sportscast, we led the newscast.
Right.
Breaking news.
Sure.
Massillon's own and Ohio State great Chris Spielman wants to play for the Browns. I'll be a son of a gun. The Browns saw that at that point, immediately got in contact with him. And he became a Cleveland Brown.
That's unbelievable.
Now, he had a very short, obviously, career as a Cleveland Brown.
Yeah.
You know, but it meant a great deal to him to come up here and at least give it a shot.
That's how
the news cycle. That's how it used to work.
It worked that way in those days. Was he refreshed my memory? And I did radio with Chris years ago.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to tell you the story.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable story. It makes sense knowing him a little bit. Then also he would do it at a banquet. I feel like he spent the last 25 years.
Right. If you're a great Buckeye, don't you go to a banquet?
A lot of banquets.
A couple of banquets.
How many banquets
do
you want to do? You want to do Friday and Saturday? We'll book you. How did he? When did his injury happen? Did it happen?
So anyway, he came in 1999. He came to training camp, and there was a real great sense of excitement. He had a great NFL career, and he was out on the field, and he was having neck problems at that time.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Browns are playing their first preseason game in the new stadium, Cleveland Browns Stadium. It was against the Minnesota Vikings. It was a Saturday night. And he went out there, and he got dinged early in the game and was wobbly coming off the field. And then again, he came back. He tried it again. And I think it was another game. We played five preseason games that year because they were in the Hall of Fame game. And it happened. Same thing happened. I mean, he left and everything. And then he went out, amazingly, here on the practice field. After they had practiced a double session that day, and he went out with just like his pads and his helmet on, and he started hitting a sled. It was really kind of cinematographic. I mean, you know, and he walked off and retired.
That was it.
Wow. Yeah, he realized that he just couldn't do it, and so that was it. So he never actually played in a regular season game with the Browns.
It's funny because up until recently, this latest run we've been in with success, up until then, I would still see his jerseys sprinkled in the stadium.
Really?
You would still see a Spielman jersey every once in a while. You'd see one in there.
Yeah.
It's just such a, you know, such a the connection to be a Massillon Tiger and a Buckeye and a Brown if you could pull it off. So you still see that a little bit. Look, there's a lot going on here, kids, a ton. So legal tampering started at noon. As I mentioned, a lot of business has taken place in the league over the weekend. Let's get you up to date where we are. And again, all of this is reportedly I suppose we need to go all the way back to Friday with the restructure of the contract of Jedrick Wills. He underwent, of course, arthroscopic surgery in December to repair that torn MCL. Mm. Wills had 13.5 of his $14 million fifth-year option tender converted to a restructured bonus, saved the Brown $10 million on the cap. We'll get to the Judy stuff in a second. We're well aware that it's happened. But I wanted to ask you, because Nathan and I were talking last week about this, like, we're at a point where we have so much money invested in the offensive line with the two guards, two tackles, one of which isn't going to play because Dewan's going to start at at tackle, whether it's right or left.
Deservedly so.
And the way he played. So this was inevitable that there's going to have to be some juggling on the offensive line. So this buys the Browns some cap space.
Yeah, and they need cap space. And I think there are some other big deals out there that they probably have to look at. I would think Cooper. Mm-hmm. They'll have to look at it at reworking there. I think Chubb, probably. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen there? I think those are two contracts that sit out there. And maybe Deshaun again.
Yeah.
Maybe they have to do something there. But they need space. There's no doubt about it. They've gotten some Ward and now with Wills. And, you know, who knows, Bo? You know, maybe some other tinkering and pulling and tugging with deals. But those big ones that we've mentioned are the ones that probably you would target and try and give them short extensions and get some more space to be able to get out and be competitive and get what you want once the bell rings.
It's one of the things.
And it's kind of wrong.
Yeah, I know.
Late for the bell.
There's no Sharpie, but it's a lot of number two pencil that's being spread all over the league in terms of writing on all this stuff. This is something that I think it's really important to understand, and we saw it play out with the Jerry Jeudy reported acquisition over the weekend. This front office knows its cap situation front and back. It understands how it's going to manage it. We had AB on at the comment. He said, I'm 3 years out on the cap. So, well, people will see like a cap number, and they will go, oh, my God, we're over the cap.
Right.
They don't know what to – no, they're fine. They're fine. They have an ownership group that's willing to convert to immediate salary in terms of signing bonuses, that's willing to do that, that's very aggressive. This front office, not only do they know their situation 3 years out, they know everybody else's. So one thing that Nathan and I talked about last week, we were going to be incredibly nimble to take advantage of a situation where someone was either dumping salary or in a spot where they did not want to do a fifth-year option on an extension or weren't sure about it. So if you look at the type of things that look at the type of guys that Andrew Berry has acquired, that this group has acquired, there's some certain things that check boxes. High first-round pick that maybe didn't pan out in certain ways, or they love guys who played at Big State U. They love Big State U guy. Mm-hmm. They love guys who you can track all the way back to high school as 4- and 5-star athletes, guys who are identified early. So we even mentioned Jerry Jeudy by name last week.
Sure.
Like they've been circling him for 2 years. But we mentioned him by last week from the standpoint of this checks every box. Denver's going to be punting on their season. Judy's a guy they've liked for a long time, former first-round pick. The talent is obviously there. It hasn't clicked the way that I think everybody thought it would in Denver.
Yep.
But they end up getting him reportedly, I think it was at a 5 and a 6?
It was a 5 and a 6.
Yeah.
And they still have a 5 and a 6 left.
Yeah.
I thought they were thin on one side last year at wide receiver.
Yep.
I mean, Cooper's great and Njoku is great, but I thought there was, the mystery was Elijah Moore, but beyond that, it was Donovan Peoples-Jones at the start, and then obviously they dealt him away to Detroit. They obviously felt that he wasn't going to be the guy that maybe they thought, but again, he was a 6th-round draft choice. But Tillman is going to have to learn the game, I think, Bo, a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I think there's an education process, and that's fine. And David Bell the same way, but David Bell started to show some signs at the end of the year. And all of that is good. It's just that this is also, I think, Andrew Berry in the front office realizes the window is open for them right now, and they have to stay going through it because they're right there. I mean, they are a playoff team that wants to make a deeper run, and to do that, you have to fiddle with things. And I always thought that they were a little bit lean on the one side. Cooper, fine. On the other side, projects. And they're too good of a team, I think, right now to be that thin on one side with a vacancy.
I think you hit the nail on the head. The sense of urgency has never been more heightened.
Right.
Your best players, many of whom you've drafted, and if you haven't drafted them, you've gone out and acquired them with a reckless abandon when it comes to acquiring talent and a dogged approach. But you have to go now. You have to.
Yes.
Your best players are in their prime. It's time to go. This Jeudy acquisition is one with very little risk, a 5 and a 6, very little risk, potentially a very high reward. We'd be remiss to not say that it hasn't clicked for him in the league.
Yeah. If you go down, and if you go down the list of guys that have been throwing to him,
oh no,
you know, that might
no
be
question.
A piece of the puzzle. Now, I know there's been criticism of him. You know, Steve Smith, you know, really went after him on the NFL Network, and there was a back and forth there in Detroit, in Denver. There's been, some, hey, what's up with him? But you're right, he's a guy that totally admires Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. So he comes to a team with the guy that has kind of mentored him. He's fashioned himself after him. He was really enamored with him when he went to Alabama. So I think that, you know, we also give guys a fresh start. Elijah sure. Moore got a fresh start here. Cooper, in some ways, mm-hmm. got a fresh start here. And this is a good spot to try and reinvent yourself at the right time, too.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that this factors into, when we were doing, last week we did kind of the free agent wish list, like the top three things. So we know that they're going to address the defensive line. They have to,
right?
Obviously, in terms of how they handle that. I'm sure they'd love to have Zadarius back, but they're going to want to add to that room and going to want to clarify what they want to do there. Running back was another one we mentioned because, you mentioned Chubb and the restructure. We know that that's likely coming, but also Nick Chubb is coming off a catastrophic knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows when he will be, if ever, back to what he once was.
Absolutely.
And you need to have more explosiveness out of that position. So that was the other one. But the overwhelming one, guys, was weapons. You need to have more weapons because you have to beat the Wizard down in Kansas City to claim the ultimate prize. You have to beat Joe Burrow in Cincinnati if they're healthy next year, and they've got some issues of their own with T. Higgins demanding a trade today. And in your own division, you have the MVP of the league.
Right.
So you've got to have enough weapons to walk into battle with any of those teams and say, hey, our arsenal's in the same vicinity as yours. So this was always it. And it's a 5 and a 6 for a former first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of this, Jim, that I think is really important is Ken Dorsey. So we talked about this a lot. Amari Cooper, David Njoku, can trust them. We're both big-time players.
Big time.
We did not have an ability or maybe willingness to spread the ball around to the rest of the receiving core much.
Mm-hmm.
When Amari was out, Elijah was really good.
The Jets game.
Yeah.
Yeah, until he got concussed.
Right.
Right.
So you've got to – I think – Ken's operation and Deshaun with Kevin, all of those guys are going to be on the same page, and we've got to start spreading the ball out a little bit more and get more people involved in the offense so we're not such a one-read, two-read offense,
mm-hmm.
which some of that's good because one and two reads means they're mostly open. But at the same time, we got to get some more people leading on the perimeter.
Yeah, and there were times when Donovan Peoples-Jones had been traded away, and so Tillman then stepped into mm-hmm. that role. There were times where in a game – during a game, at a key point in a game, tight games down the stretch, Jacksonville, Chicago, where you really had to score a lot in those games to win those games. And in the Bears game, you really have a hiccup in the first half and you're down by 10 in the fourth quarter. And I would notice that Flacco and I think Watson before that would have to educate a kid like Tillman mid-game about run the route the right way. And as you said, you can't go into battle that way in really big games. If you're thinking big, and this team deserves to think big, and they should think big, you have to be able to go in full bore, mm-hmm. With everybody on the same page and at an ability level that can match those other teams.
Yeah, it's an arms race, man. It just is. This AFC, you're going to have to go through those teams to be able to do it. So I love this deal. He was electric at Alabama.
He was. Wasn't it amazing, Bo, how many – great receivers have come out of Alabama in this run with Nick Saban. I mean, it's amazing. It really is. I mean, you could. Yeah. I mean,
Julio,
Cooper, Julio Coop. Jones, yeah. Ridley, the kid that had the tragic accident, Ruggs out in, Jerry
Waddle.
Judy, Devontae Smith,
Waddle down
Waddle.
In Miami.
I mean, gosh, that's amazing.
No, they've had
because you think of Alabama, it's kind of a pounded out team and. They had great receivers. Really did. He really changed that program so many times down there before he stepped away this year.
I think, and you knew him certainly probably when he was defensive coordinator here.
what an experience.
Yes, to be. But his the thing about that you have to, as a quick diversion here, the one thing about him that I respected I think he's the greatest college football coach of all time, but I think the thing that's most remarkable is he was really a chameleon. He changed his approach offensively to fit what was happening. Their early years.
Several times.
It was very much a 8 yards in a cloud of dust, if you will, because they had big time backs.
They had backs coming out of their ears.
Then when Kiffin got there after they lost to Ohio State in 15, he flipped. And then he went, we're going to go get the number one quarterback in the country every year. We're going to go get 5-star receivers. And they would have a Julio or a Coop, like Coop played in the 15 game against Ohio State. But then they started to get all of those guys together. They had Devonta, Ruggs, Judy, all those, they were Waddle. They were all in the same group. Like, it was just an abundance of offensive talent. So it's just a remarkable job to be able to stay at the top of the sport as long as he did and do it in so many different ways.
Yeah.
So I hope that's a good connection.
Man, I'll tell you what, though. They had receivers coming out. They've had picks all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
But a wide receiver, wow, just amazing. Yeah. Amazing talent coming out of there.
Those three.
I think they have some more this year coming out. You know, that really struggled a little bit because they struggled at quarterback early in the year with Milroe in and out and then finally in. But he ran so effectively. But still, Isaiah Bond and Burton, I think, was the other kid. They had some really top-line receivers that might have lost some numbers because of the hesitancy at quarterback.
If you just imagine just the receiving draft classes of the last 10 years at Ohio State, LSU, and Alabama.
Yeah.
Those three schools. Right. I mean, that's some of the very best in the league. So Jerry Judy's going to be here. He's going to get a chance to restart his career, and he's going to do so with a receiving room of – I love what you brought up about Coop. I think that's huge. Like, Amari is such a leader, such a follow-me guy. He does – not big with words, but just actions.
Right.
And I think that's going to be huge for Jerry Judy to be in the same room with Amari Cooper next year. So that was the big one. We also had this over the weekend as well, and there is a lot going on in the league right now in terms of guys moving places. Gabe Davis is a guy that we had talked about last week.
From Buffalo.
He goes to Jacksonville is the deal that gets done there. So that would tell me Ridley is out.
Out, yeah.
Is the way that'll probably go. That just happening the last couple of minutes. I did want to get to this, though, this Mary Kay report that Joe Flacco could return to the Browns in a backup role. This was a report from over the weekend that the Browns could be in the business of Jacoby Brissett if that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So what that tells me is because of Deshaun's injury, it's too risky to go with Dorian Thompson-Robinson as the full-time backup, that you need to have somebody.
I agree.
And I think we'll probably make some sense.
It
sounds like Brissett's going to end up in New England, though, is what it seems like.
Yeah, well, that's where he started. That's his first his first stop. And he bailed them out. If you remember, folks, he bailed them out when Tom Brady got the 4-game suspension because of Deflategate. He won a couple of games for them. And then Brady came back. And he was a good guy. I'm a tremendous guy here.
Yes.
But 4-7 was the record that he had here. Not all his fault at all.
No.
But I would love to see Flacco back, Bo. I just thought he was fantastic. I loved watching him throw the ball. It was unbelievable watching him throw the ball. And I think he gave them kind of a totally different offense.
I agree.
I mean, just bombs away and down the field, the ability to get down the field in one big chunk. And they did that a number of times. And I think that's coming back to the league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think these spread offenses and RPO game, I think they're there because of the athleticism of these quarterbacks coming out of the college game and into the NFL. But still, there are times that when you can just get down the field in a hurry, I mean, it really makes things – it's economy. It's exciting economy, I think. And he's that guy.
Yep.
And he was just such a great guy here.
Spectacular. I mean, face the franchise in a month. It was pretty remarkable what all happened. A couple of rules for today, guys. Field Yates with this on Twitter. Teams can begin engaging with agents at noon today. That's been happening. Deals can be agreed to but not finalized. So no deal can become official until after 4 o'clock. That's on Wednesday, which I alluded to at the top of the show. Teams can speak to players who represent themselves without an agent before Wednesday at 4 p.m. Jersey swaps are allowed on this. So this is the Twitter thing. Uno, is that this about? So, but players can change their minds, so no swaps are official until Wednesday at 4. Is this like jersey number stuff?
People do like jersey swaps where they put like the
Russell
new
Wilson
jersey
and the Steelers.
Yeah, stuff like that. Wow. So you are allowed to do that, but remember,
teams can do that even.
I think so. I'll have to dig more into what Field said.
I mean, Twitter has no laws, so I think anybody can do whatever you want on that. So that's where he's. Oh, there's Dom's out there. Lots going on. Lots going on here, kids. Those are your hot topics of the day. They're presented by Vivid Seats, official fan experience partner of your Cleveland Browns. Coming up next, we're going to go through the list of everything that is reportedly happened today. And I mentioned Russell Wilson to the Steelers, so we've got a little bit of that to weigh in on. Some other new faces and new places stuff. We will do that coming up next. The great Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns, with me here. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And hey there, friends. Bo here for my great friends at James B. Beam Distilling Company. Booker Knows vision for Knob Creek was very simple. The embodiment of full-flavored American whiskey through age, proof, and flavor to create a product that sets the standard. And they've done that. Knob Creek is created with champion those who stay true to their craft, know what they're looking for, and don't feel the profession or the pressure to conform. Now through April 30th, don't forget this, take advantage, Knob Creek steak rebate. You get a rebate when you buy a Knob Creek bourbon plus a steak. You just upload a picture of your receipt to knobcreeksteakrebate.com. They're going to send you $20 to your Venmo right away. Must be 21 to participate. See full terms at knobcreeksteakrebate.com. Knob Creek, Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey, 50% alcohol by volume, 2024 James B. Beam Distilling Company, Claremont, Kentucky. Knob Creek, drink what tastes right. Lots going on. So what was interesting, Jim, last week we did like, and The Voice joining me here on the program today, great privilege. We were we went through the AFC North. We had Brooke Pryor on, who does a great job at ESPN. Mm-hmm. And we pressed her on, you're really not just going to have Pickett and you're not really going to have Pickett and Mason Rudolph. She's like, no, that's what they're going to do. They believe in those guys you trust. And so Nathan at one point said, well, but is that what you would do? And she's like, I'm not saying that's what I would do. Is that? And we concluded the interview by saying, well, we hope so. We hope that they stay with Kenny Pickett and stay with Mason Rudolph because there is a very hard ceiling to that. Of course, that was all subterfuge. That is not what they did at all.
No.
Russell Wilson will be a Pittsburgh Steeler next season. He will do so for the bargain price of about $1 million because the Broncos are paying him $38 million. What do you make of Russell Wilson to the Steelers?
Well, I think it's I think it's surprising to me how this guy has just kind of fallen apart talent-wise on the field. I mean, his game really just came apart, which is mysterious. And it came apart in Seattle in the last year or so.
Sure.
And then it definitely came apart in Denver. And it certainly, it just exploded in a bad way for him when Sean Payton came in there. So, I mean, he goes into Pittsburgh. I think that he will compete against Pickett. He will have a mountain of experience over that kid. And I think that the Steelers, I know the general manager at the combine, Omar Khan, said we have total faith in Kenny Pickett. It will be interesting to see how they fashion themselves in training camp because I would think that Russell Wilson could beat him in a competition as the number two guy coming in to try and knock off a young kid, if only because of experience.
Well,
and that now we have never played Russell Wilson well. We haven't played him a lot, but we haven't played him well. I mean, he kind of took us apart in Denver this year, and he did anytime he played against the Browns in Seattle. We just had a darn time trying to control him. We never knew if he was running or throwing.
Sure.
Sometimes he did both, and he did it very effectively. But his game really needs to be put back together. So it will be interesting. He's never sat well because he's never sat.
No.
I mean, so I don't know how he'll handle that, but I would imagine he goes in there thinking that he can beat this kid out and be the Steelers' starting quarterback on opening day.
I would think very much that he's signed under the impression that he is,
and that
I'm going to go be the starter. You know, the thing with him that's interesting is he's basically become. It wasn't that long ago, it was Let Russ Cook, right? And he was throwing bombs to everybody. DK Metcalf, his rookie year, and away they went. Well. What has happened in the last couple? He's really become a check down Charlie. I mean, he led the league in pass attempts within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. He led the league in pass attempts behind the line of scrimmage. So that's kind of who he's become. This is the one part that's interesting though. So they are a playoff team last year at 10-7. Smoke and mirrors, but they do it.
I don't know how they do it, but they do it.
It's nuts that he doesn't
really
ever
is.
Have losing seasons
no,
because
he
they
just...
don't get. So last year, Russ was 67% completions, right around 3,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, 8 picks. So Pickett in his career is a 62% passer. He's basically a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception. So while Russ only threw for 3,000 yards. So again, it's all short yardage stuff. But if a 5% uptick in completion percentage, a 3-to-1 touchdown interception versus a 1-to-1, you win 10 games with Pickett, that's what they're banking on, right?
Yes.
It's right there.
Yeah.
That's it. And that's why you sign him, and that's why he went there, because he knows he's going to be better than what they got with Pickett.
Yeah, because they're still all about they want their running game to be their calling card, and they're going to play great defense.
Yes.
Now, whether or not they can continue to do that, like you and I just mentioned, somehow they do it. And they do. They really – they look dead around Thanksgiving, and then, boom, they come out. The other thing about Russell Wilson, Bo, is this. I don't know that he's ever been the same quarterback since he threw that pick in the Super Bowl on the goal line against the Patriots. I don't know if that whole franchise has been the same since that. There was unrest in the locker room because of a call. They doubted Pete Carroll. They doubted Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it can have a lingering effect.
Oh, that's the throw I think that probably it definitely derailed what felt like could have been a dynasty because they were all very young.
Well, they're going to win two in a row, right?
At least they're going to win two in a row. They just whipped the Broncos the year before.
Right.
Like they were in a position where they could have won two and then maybe win three. And then, but
that's
what started it.
Had a couple of 10-point leads in that, in that particular Super Bowl against New England. But that one play.
Yes.
He'll be remembered for that, you know, throwing that pick.
They'll never forgive.
As will Malcolm Butler, who ended up with a ton of money because he made the play.
Well, and it was interesting. That's the one where Bill doesn't take the timeout, right?
Right.
The clock just bleeds, and you're like, what's he doing? He's just going to lose the Super Bowl like this?
Right.
Like, they're not going to make them snap it. They're not going to make him do anything. Like, we're just going to lose the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
And then it all worked because he didn't hand the ball to Marshawn Lynch, and that was it.
It was amazing, and there's that great NFL Films documentary, Do Your Job, I think it's called. It's about the Patriots that year. Chad O'Shea's in that, extensively in that game, in that piece. And that kid Butler had trouble with that route all week long in their practice, but he had seen it a lot. And the preparedness of them to be able to get, you know, just continue to harp on that kid to, you know, you're probably going to see this. And bang, he comes up with that play. But Russell Wilson, since that throw, has always been doubted, I think.
Well, for sure. And then you started to get, you saw that was the true break of Seattle.
Yeah.
Because it was the defensive guys against Russ and Pete Carroll. And inevitably, Pete got sick of him and sent him. And it ends up being a ransom that the Seahawks get back from the Russell Wilson deal. I don't think you can. I think it's impossible not to say that Pittsburgh got better with this. They will.
Oh,
this is better than what they were.
Absolutely.
I do think that. I don't know that this to me doesn't change them in terms of the pecking order in the AFC North, in terms of where we stand right now. They're not as dangerous as we are. They are not as dangerous as Cincinnati is with a healthy Burrow, and they're certainly not as dangerous as Baltimore is with a healthy Lamar. But our guy's got to come back from injury too.
Yeah.
Our quarterback's got to come back from injury. So, and now this gives them competent quarterback play. This division, it's going to be right back to a meat grinder.
Oh, it is for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's exceptional, and that's why you would like to see them be able to – you really need to see Deshaun Watson play – and play a lot, okay?
Yes.
You just to get a full season in and to be able to play, because we are left with that memory of that amazing second half against Baltimore, 14 for 14, and to win there and really beat Lamar Jackson at his own game. But it's just been short snippets with him.
It really has.
For one reason or another.
Yeah. No, that's what made like the Flacco run so magical is you stacked a month.
Yeah.
You know, it was four games over 300 yards. Like, it was, oh, okay, like, let's go. And so we need to see that from Deshaun going forward. So that happens in Pittsburgh, perhaps some disconnect in Cincinnati. T. Higgins requesting a trade this morning. The tag was placed on him last week.
Yeah. It's $21 million, isn't it, on the tag? I think they'll play hardball, knowing the way they do things down there. So that's going to be an unhappy situation if it lingers and he doesn't show up. You know, that really is a problem. I don't think the quarterback would be very happy with that. Sometimes, and in regards to him, it seems as though they kind of lean on him to tell them what he wants, much like Mahomes in Kansas City. What do you want? Who do you want? And I would think that he would make – he loves Higgins, you know. And when they had all three, Boyd, Chase, and Higgins, they were really rolling. That was when they made the Super Bowl run and almost did it another year. But I think that they will dig in. I think that's going to be nasty.
I think you have the right read on that, my friend, knowing how Mike Brown works a little bit.
That's that's the way Mike Brown is.
That's his operation. Now, here's the thing. They've been in this position. I'm not going to make too big of a deal about him demanding a trade now, because this is kind of the standard operating procedure of when you get tagged and you want a long-term extension is you demand a trade. That does not mean that he's going to be traded. Remember, they tagged Jesse Bates. Jesse Bates did not demand a trade, but he also didn't show up for camp. He ended up playing out his contract and then walking in free agency to Atlanta. Another example, this was Jonah Williams, who did demand a trade.
Right.
He did demand a trade. They never traded him. He ended up playing out his contract, and that was fine. This is the thing for them that will be fascinating. It's the point you made. It's the Burrow point.
Yeah.
So Burrow said when he got that deal done, I want Higgins and Chase. I want to make sure that we do this in a way that those guys, that we're all here. But the reality is you can't have 50% of your cap on two receivers and a quarterback.
True.
So if they do move off of him, I think the thing down there that they're hoping for is something similar. Now, you're not going to land a type of player, but kind of the blueprint of the Stephon Diggs move from Minnesota, when Minnesota dealt him to Buffalo for a first-round pick that netted them Justin Jefferson.
Right.
Now, you're not going to probably get that lucky.
I don't think you're going to get that.
But you may get a low first-round pick or a high two for Higgins, and that might be what they do. The question is, can you keep number nine happy if you do that?
You know, the other thing about them, Bo, is I give them a lot of credit. I think Duke Tobin does a great job down there, and I think they find receivers. I'm going to kill the pronunciation of that kid, but they found that kid from Princeton last year.
Yep.
And Yoshivas or something like that, that Andre Yoshivas.
I was just going to look up the pronunciation.
Anyway,
I think Yoshivas is correct.
Yeah,
Yoshivas.
Thank you. Wow.
There you go. Good job out of you.
Well, you're the voice.
Well, hey,
you know, I remember practicing it like 100 times, and then he didn't get in the game on opening day, but he did in the last game. But they find guys like that down there, you know, but not to that level. I mean, they find a complimentary type of receiver. They do such a great job offensively with that roster down there.
But
you're right, and that will get ugly. I mean, if that guy digs in, that will get ugly down there. And maybe Joe Burrow will step in and be kind of a mediator in the whole process.
You ask the people down there, the year that they circled was last year, because that was before Higgins had to be tagged. They got to do this Chase deal at some point. Yeah. Now, he wants to wait till after Justin Jefferson, but they got to do the Chase deal at some point. They did the Burrow deal. But last year was their year. Burrow goes down, Higgins misses games, and it's done, and the season's derailed.
Well, it really all fell apart that first or second day of camp when you know, he went down with that calf injury, and let's face it, he was a shadow of himself on opening day here in Cleveland. Oh. I mean, and then that defense just went after him. And it was awful. I mean, they had to get him out. Remember, they pulled him out because
just for his own health. I was like,
I think they said there's no way we're going to score against these guys.
No.
And he probably shouldn't have played anyway.
No,
I think he talked himself and talked them into playing. But they were up. They were swimming upstream all year long, and yet I thought they were going to get there when they won that Monday night game against Jacksonville. It's the game where Lawrence got the high ankle and then came in here the next week. But when they won that game, I said to myself, they are rolling. And and they could be a problem.
Yes.
If they get there.
Yeah. So you think about
it. Then he got hurt again.
Then he went down again. They actually were okay. Like, Browning played okay for them, too, down the street.
Oh,
he played pretty good when he came in.
He did a great job out of
Washington. He did a nice job. So this is all the reason all of this is happening. And then, by the way, some people had mentioned maybe Christian Wilkins being a target for the Browns at defensive tackle. So he signs with the Raiders. Do you have the number on that up, Uno? It's huge.
Yeah, it's, I believe, 5 years, $110 million.
What's the guaranteed?
I can find that. Give me 1 second.
That's the one but I always thought he'd be too rich. Like, you're not in the business for a $100 million defensive tackle.
84 and three-quarters
guaranteed. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Good Lord.
I have to tell you, he probably was helped a great deal by the Chris Jones deal getting 100%. Done in Kansas City, right? Because 100%. Then they could, you know, take him off the list. Not that a lot of teams probably thought he's going to become available, but they were playing the game that he was going to go to free agency. But Wilkins definitely helped by that, you know, really by Jones signing that big deal in Kansas City. You know, the Browns did a great job last year, a great job putting that defensive line together, without really breaking the bank under NFL standards, okay? But I thought they did a great job, you know, Za'Darius Smith, Tomlinson. Bo, before he got hurt, Maurice Hurst gave them some great play. Shelby Harris played pretty well for them. I mean, those guys all came in and really did a good job for them. I commend the Browns for being able to do that because it was doing it a different way rather than going out and giving a guy $84 million guaranteed, right?
For sure. And here's the deal. When you have Miles, you don't need to spend another on anywhere else. Like, you've got Miles there. You got Dalvin Tomlinson back. He's coming back next year. He's in the mix. You can buttress guys around him. You saw something with Oboe. I think Alex Wright down the end of the year was
a good point.
He finally shined and looked good. And I do think they liked Zadarius back.
And we'll see what happens with Ika, you know, Siaki Ika. You know, what happens there?
That was disappointing.
Those guys really, you know, because the Browns were in contention and made the playoffs, those guys will really get a redshirt year, on this team. We'll see what happens there.
And I think probably, I think AB is probably big game hunting still. Right now out there, they probably aren't – by the acquisition of Jerry Jeudy, they probably feel pretty good about where they are with the weapons. But there's a bunch of – like Eric Armstead hit free agency. There's talk that the Chargers may dump Khalil Mack and Joey Bosa because of the salary cap hell they're in. So there are going to be a lot of teams and guys who become available who aren't not yet. And I do think you'll see Andrew Berry be pretty aggressive here and be in the mix on guys. There's a report this morning of being in on Zach Moss, the receiver, the running back out of the Colts. Potentially coming in here as well. So I think there's a lot still to unpack here. But in the AFC North, this stuff is happening. The T. Higgins stuff is happening. He's demanded a trade. And it is Russell Wilson is going to come quarterback the Pittsburgh Steelers next year. Meantime, in Baltimore, it's going to be an exodus because they got – salary cap hell everywhere, and they're going to have an entirely new roster basically going forward. But they still got Lamar, and they still got they got Matabuke done over the weekend, so that helps them. And all of us are chasing Kansas City. So that kind of sets the table of where you are in the AFC North. Let's set the table for the rest of the NFL through this wild first 48 hours of free
agency. Where will OBJ get his $18 million this year? He gets it every year.
He's going to get it somewhere.
He will get it somewhere. I mean, he keeps showing that. Here's my real, the one-handed catch on Sunday night against the Cowboys. Maybe. Yeah. He makes, and people go, oh my gosh.
So great.
Let's put him in our uniform and see if he can do that again. But he ends up with $18 million all the time.
Every time, man. That was one of those ones when it was signed. We went, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's going to work out. All right, we'll go around the rest of the NFL. A lot of deals being done here. The Bears very aggressive in free agency. Another defensive end off the board with Minnesota. We're waiting on Cousins. It feels like that could be Atlanta. We'll get to all of that coming up next. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
And don't miss Billy Joel, Rod Stewart together for the first time ever. It's Friday, September 13th, Cleveland Browns Stadium. Tickets are on sale now. Visit clevelandbrownsstadium.com/BillyandRod2024 for more information. It's Billy Joel and Rod Stewart together for one night only.
I'm going to that.
I feel like it's going to be good.
I have seen Rod Stewart a couple of times, and he's been fantastic. He's fantastic.
Do you think I would know more Rod Stewart than I think?
Yes, because I went that way. Now, I have not seen Billy Joel, and I missed him when he played at Progressive Field the one year, not too long ago. So I think that's going to be a great night. I'm very excited.
I think my hunch is I would know more of both of those guys than I think.
I think you'd be surprised that you'll know a lot of Rod Stewart.
I went to a Mellencamp show once 15 years ago, and I didn't think I'd know much more beyond Jack and Diane.
Right.
And then I ended up knowing like 25 songs.
Well,
everything. Yeah, you know, we used to listen to the radio all the time for the music, you know, Jim.
And then it was like,
you know, you didn't have this situation where everything was on demand. You didn't say play this by this. Like, they just played something next, not always knowing what it was. And so these things snuck in.
Well, I think that's going to be a fun night.
That will be. Yeah, we got the Stones here this summer.
Yeah.
You got them both.
Wow.
Yeah, it's big. All right, lots of news. We mentioned the news around the AFC North. Our former quarterback, Baker Mayfield, getting a three-year deal in Tampa Bay.
Good for him.
Very good for him. $50 million of that is guaranteed of a three-year deal worth around $100. Very similar to the Geno Smith deal that he got with Seattle a couple of years ago.
So if you look at the quarterback slotting, I mean, he's kind of middle of the road to get that deal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's in the $30 million range, right? I mean, not on average. And there you go. There you have it. It will be fascinating to see how that all works out, if that is an everlasting fit for him.
Yeah, my hunch is they're not viewing it that way. I'm guessing they're viewing it as Mike Evans is coming back. Let's go try to win. It's a bad division. Let's try to win this division a couple of years. You know that down there about that fan base. It's pretty fickle.
Sure.
They're not the. It's not like a peer, like where they're going to show up no matter what. Like
it's much college, isn't it?
Yeah.
The other thing now, that will become a tougher division if Kirk Cousins goes to Atlanta.
That's the next part of it will be that. It's pretty amazing, though, like how – do you remember everybody like blown away at the Mahomes deal, the 10 years, 400 million? Yeah. Like, oh my God, 40 million a year.
They won't be able to do
now.
Anything. Yeah.
Not now. Now all of a sudden 40 for Mahomes and 30 for Baker. You're like, my God, Mahomes is worth 100 on a true free market. But that deal does get done. And so he will be back at least for, they have an out after 2 years, but a 3 year deal for him. And I will give him a great deal of credit for many things. You could have just packed it in. I mean, he goes to Carolina.
He's a mess.
Yeah. They cut him.
Yeah.
Release him. Goes to the Rams
to
back up.
Has that one big game.
Al Michaels on the call.
Yeah, he was
Al
there.
Al had to have money on it.
He was there like.
He had to.
He had 4 days. I'm saying, or maybe 2 days to get ready, and he went in and won the game.
He did.
Yeah, with the Rams.
Yeah. And then that parlayed into he was fighting for the job last year in Tampa. He had kind of a tip. He basically had a mirror season of his first season of Kevin's first season here.
I would agree. Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, it was 64% completions and 26 touchdowns, 8 picks, that type of thing.
He was terrific against the Eagles in the playoff game that they won. I thought he was very good against Detroit.
He was.
Okay. They just didn't get it into the end zone a couple of times early in that game and settled for field goals instead. Now, his offensive coordinator is gone.
Yep.
He ended up as the head coach in Carolina.
We'll
see what happens there. I just always think of him as a guy that can blow up. He can blow up.
Both ways, right?
Good and bad. Absolutely, yeah.
There's a volatility to his play.
Yeah, and I think that's what drives him. I will tell you this, Bo. I thought when he went to Carolina and it didn't work out there, I said he will be on College Game Day, and he will be exceptional.
Yes.
You know, I saw him this year, the day of the Oklahoma-Texas game, the Red River rivalry, and he was tremendous.
Yes.
But when it didn't work out in Carolina, I thought he's going to use the Heisman Trophy and he's going to get to ESPN. He'll be on game day. And
so
look, I didn't see Saban going there. I saw Baker going there.
yeah, certainly felt like that would be the way it would go. I agree with you. He was a natural for that.
And he will be when he wants to do it.
Yeah, yep, there's no question. But good on him. He gets a bunch of money there, so he will
stay in
Tampa.
Isn't that good that we still have kind of a good feeling about him? I do.
I do, too.
No, I think. I thought,
no one's going to forget
Thursday
night.
I thought he resurrected us, you know, from that losing syndrome that we were in, the 1-31, and just that first night that he came in and off the bench and Tyrod Taylor went down, he came in, he electrified that place. Finally, that place had not been, it had been, you know, dormant for a couple of years, and just that, what he did, he finally got that losing syndrome and flushed it out of here. I thought
it was the biggest change in the feeling of a stadium that I can ever recall, because this was anger, the vitriol in the fan base in that stadium that night against the Jets, because you're going to lose again.
It was 14-0.
14-0. Yeah. It wasn't going well with Tyrod, and it was like, no more of this. Like it was a fed up building, and then he came in and it
boom.
Flipped.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And
not only 14-0, Bo, but Isaiah Crowell had done damage as a Jet.
Yes. Right. There was that part of it as well. But
going into
that
game, I remember the town feeling if they don't win this one,
that's it.
When will they win?
Well, we started to look out on the calendar.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
you're
God,
playing
you're
that
lose,
game.
Lose,
yeah, yeah.
Lose, lose.
Exactly, yeah. But you're right. So that's the feeling I have about him.
Yeah.
You know, I have a good feeling about him.
And he was damn good in 2020 in the COVID year.
Oh, yeah.
He was very good in the COVID year.
He was.
Quarterback to win over in Pittsburgh. They get the turnovers early, but was very good there.
He also engineered the win against Pittsburgh here to get them in.
That's
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have good feelings about him, too. It was one of those things where, you know, they why were things done the way that they were done? And I think the reason they were done is because you're trying to chase something bigger.
Yeah.
And there was a ceiling, I think, you know, and you're trying to chase down Mahomes, you're chasing down Burrow.
Here's another reason, and it's kind of a personal reason why I have a good feeling about him. Doug Deacon's last game was against the Bengals, and he was wrapping up an unbelievable amount of time with the Browns, like 45, 50 years of his life, you know, with the Browns. Anyway, we had a little get-together with his family right after the game in a suite that they had that day. And now remember, Baker didn't play in that game, okay, because he had the shoulder.
Yep.
And I'll be a son of a gun. All of a sudden, walking through the door, Baker Mayfield and his wife, they came in to wish That's Doug great. The best. And you know what? I just thought that was great.
That's big class.
It was. Yeah, it really was. And it was very, very heartfelt. And he got a boot out of Doug, you know, going into the locker room and talking with him a couple of times. But anyway, I really
That's
thought that
cool.
was really a cool moment with him. Yeah, so I wish him well.
Yeah, same. That is very, very cool. We have some other things. Michael Pittman Jr. and the Colts have agreed to a 3-year, $71.5 million.
Those receivers
deal.
Started to come off the board pretty quickly, didn't they?
They did. Yeah. They did. Yeah, they really did. Jonathan Greenard, he goes to the Vikings. You mentioned the Cousins thing, so I'm very curious what Minnesota's doing because they're spending in spots like this, but it looks like they're going to start over at quarterback.
Yeah.
Who is the quarterback going
to
be there?
Nobody is right now, right?
Nobody. So are they trying to find a way to move up in the draft? I think they'll be a really interesting team to watch here over the next day. DeAndre Swift signing with the Bears on a 3-year, $24 million. I love that for Caleb Williams going forward. Another weapon for the Bears in that situation. So those are some of the things that have happened around the league today. We've reportedly made one of our big moves, the Jerry Jeudy acquisition, over the weekend. My hunch is there will be even more coming here in the next 24 hours or so. We'll keep you posted on all of that in the second hour of the program. Have a little bit of over-under as well coming it up over the next hour as well. We continue with the great voice of the Cleveland Browns, the great Jim Donovan. You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, welcome back into Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, sports betting partner of Cleveland Browns, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland. Merely Bo Bishop, the great voice of the Cleveland Browns, the great Jim Donovan joining me. We had the Jerry Jeudy news over the weekend.
Yeah.
So 5th and 6th, Jeudy comes in. From your vantage point, wish list wise, how much of a wish does this satisfy, and then what else needs to happen for AB?
It was my first wish, and it really was that they would have to get a receiver. And I really thought pick 54 would be the way that they would do it. I thought the combination might be early on when free agency started, and maybe this will pan out. They would get a defensive tackle in free agency and then go in the draft, which is pretty rich with wide receiver talent. And even though they don't have the first-round pick, there would still be enough talent available at number 54 that they would go that route. So receiver was the top of the list, and then, you know, Jerry Jeudy is coming. And so that really answers that need. I still think along the defensive line. The Schwartz defensive line is so important with that front four because it really all happens there. And everybody makes plays off of what they do, that I think that's the next thing they have to address. I always thought still that maybe linebacker was something that they need. You get kind of a 2-for-1 when you go get a linebacker a lot of times.
Yep.
Because you get the player and he's playing on your defense. But then you also get probably, you know, Bubba Ventrone would be happy. You get a guy that can help out on special teams. Matthew Adams was that kind of signing by the Browns. Not a big signing at all, but a very useful one when he was healthy, that he could go in a pinch, play in your defense at linebacker, but was outstanding and needed on special teams. So I thought that, but definitely I think you're going to have to get a running back too. We just don't know what the availability will be with Nick Chubb at the beginning of the season. That's a real push, I think. And I know he's doing everything in his power to be ready to go by opening day, probably by the opening of training camp.
No,
right?
And Nick, by next week.
Yeah, by ready to go then. But I would think that's a big ask right now. So you're going to have to really perk up that running back situation. I would think those are the things that I would be looking at.
Yeah, I think you're onto it. And I think Jeudy satisfies part of it. depth on the, in the middle of the defensive line. Now, some of those guys could come back, like Maurice Hurst can come back. You could see some of those guys coming back on the defensive line. The question I think will be interesting will be, are there any guys on this roster that potentially are traded? We have such depth at corner, for example. We have such depth on the offensive line, for example. Will there be trades that are done between now and the draft once we start to get into the real league year?
Yeah, well, Greg Newsom's name has been out there.
Sure.
Boy, I think he would be devastated if he got traded.
I would too.
Think he really loves it here. And I think he felt as the year went on last year, and it's not just the interception thing, that he was dry on that until he got that pick in Baltimore, and then he had to play very well against Jacksonville. But I think that you're right. I mean, he would be a candidate. I mean, you know, if you're looking at a trade situation and where the Browns are kind of heavy, I think they're very, very good at corner, MJ Emerson. I think they're pretty happy with the kid from Northwestern. Cam Mitchell played well, and I think they look at upside there. And, of course, you got Denzel Ward, and he's great. That would be one area, Bo, that you could probably take a look at that. Let me just go back to the wide receiver thing. And that is, you're probably going to have to get a young receiver, though, because you have a bunch of guys that I know they're good for coming in this year. But beyond that, what are they going to do? You know, is Elijah Moore going to be long-term here?
Yeah.
I don't know. Cooper's probably not long-term here. So you're going to have to start to develop your own receivers. Now, whether that is David Bell and Tillman, that's a pretty long road, I think, right now.
I agree.
I think that, you know, you probably have to use what the draft is good at, and the draft right now is really good at wide receiver this year. I wouldn't be surprised if they went again, got a young receiver to come in here.
Do you remember, and I know that you do, but just for the sake of posterity and the audience's sake, the Green Bay Packers when Ron Wolf was running them with Mike Holmgren, and they drafted a quarterback every single
time
draft.
That was his rule.
That was the rule.
You always get a quarterback. Thus, you're able to deal Mark Brunell and get something.
Yes.
I think Hasselbeck was there.
Yeah, they did it over and over again.
Holmgren took him with him to Seattle.
The kid who was with them from LSU that ended up signing with Seattle as
Matt Flynn.
Yeah.
Matt Flynn won a national title, didn't he?
Yeah, beat the Buckeyes. But that was down in the Sugar Bowl. Is at that game. But the attitude of, the reason I brought it up is that's where we have to be with receiver now in this league.
I think so. Yeah.
And this operation needs to be. You need to draft one every year, and hope you hit.
Hit. Yeah.
And eventually the law of averages, you will.
Yeah.
But they need to hit on some of those guys.
But one time I did a game. for NBC in Green Bay when they it was when Lindy Infante had left Cleveland and became the head coach of the Packers, and they got a good run and were on their way to make the playoffs because they had Don Majkowski,
the magic man. Yeah.
And I was doing a game against Kansas City, and they ended up losing at Lambeau Field, and it cost them the playoff spot. But right after that, that's when they started to connect on the quarterbacks.
Yeah, and that was Sterling Sharp would have been on that team.
Yeah.
He was very, very good on those Packer teams, and then that led to Holmgren, and
boom,
the rest was history. You know, we're into free agency. The Packers thing spurned this in my memory. What do you remember of the Reggie White?
Oh, I remember it very well.
Free agency, because he was the true
free agent. Right. He went on a tour, and that's what they used to do, where the player would go on a tour. Now I don't even think they come really normally, and they let their agent do it, and they get a money figure, and then they sign it or they don't sign it. But back then, I mean, they used to really set a tour. He did the tour with his wife.
Yeah.
Okay. And he came to Cleveland, and Art Modell threw everything, more than he had, Bo, but he threw everything at Reggie White, and they thought they had him. Okay. Couldn't believe, you know, just said we're going to have Reggie White. The announcement will be coming very soon, so get set. It could be a press conference tomorrow at 3. And he thought the thing that put them over the finish line in Modell's mind, he bought leather coats for Reggie White and his wife and presented them to him.
Really?
Yeah.
That was going to be the seal.
Nobody came up with anything better than this. Dinner and a leather jacket for your wife and for you.
One
took the leather jackets and signed in Green Bay. people were shocked that he would go to Green Bay because at that time, Green Bay was not really good, although he made them good and made them great. And the other thing, there was a thought out there that the African-American athlete did not want to go and play in Green Bay.
Yeah.
You know, weather, small town, very small town. But I do remember the Browns and Art Modell, he was devastated when he didn't get him. Then, of course, he went on the Andre Rison search after that.
That was the same.
Had to go to a bank to get a loan to be able to sign him. And that's really, that signing and that transaction, that was when it was clear Art had to sell the team. He was broke.
He's done.
Isn't that unbelievable? He was broke.
Yes.
And he had a passionate fan base, you know, in that old rickety stadium that was putting 78,000 in there on a Sunday afternoon. But he just had no penchant for being able to control his money. So those were two free agent stories. One that he didn't get, but he ended up buying two beautiful leather
jackets.
Great coats. Which was perfect for what? For Green Bay.
For Green Bay weather. Did he have Browns inscribed on
them? No,
like
he
bomber
didn't.
Jackets.
No, they were
like, just really like
beautiful leather jackets. I remember seeing them. Yeah.
My
great
goodness.
Stories.
That is quite great. The league is slightly different now.
A little bit.
That, you know, you speak about how that, like, Reggie went on that tour, and there was a Sports Illustrated cover with him in the front of it, and then a bunch of jerseys around, and the Browns were one of the jerseys, and the Eagles and the Packers. I forget who else was in the mix. Might have been Washington. Can't remember. But I remember that vividly. And to kind of bring that whole full circle when you said about going on the tour, remember when Urban got the job in Jacksonville, he thought free agents would come in and he could recruit them.
Yeah.
And they had to be like, oh, no. And he's like, well, what do you mean? They'd sign and they don't come and visit us? They're like, yeah.
Yeah.
They'd agree to terms without visiting.
Yeah.
It's the NFL. That's the way that it is. That's how much it's changed in 30 years.
Yeah, obviously he had great difficulty in converting into the pro game. But you know who else did? I have to tell you, Butch Davis had a lot of trouble doing that. We used to do a show with him on Monday nights. People might remember it. Just down the street here, there was a steakhouse called Damon's.
Yeah.
Okay, and we used to do the show there live Monday nights. And when he would come in, the thing that bugged him the most, Bo, was number one, he was watching his Miami Hurricanes just roll over people on Saturdays, and then his Browns team get rolled over on Sunday. But by Monday, he would always say he could never understand, why can I only dress a certain amount of players? Why can I only dress a certain amount of players on Sunday? I mean, we have them all under contract. I mean, shoot, at a home game at the Orange Bowl, we could run out as many as we had uniforms for. Right. And he just couldn't. Yeah, he couldn't convert from the college game.
Did he have, for the people out there who don't recall, the younger audience, he had resurrected Miami the second time.
Oh yeah.
So Jimmy Howard and Jimmy did it.
Yep.
Dennis Erickson, then it fell off a cliff, and then he got it and resurrected it, and then he set the table for, I think, the most talented college football team of all time.
Unbelievable.
In the early 2000s with Miami. Did he ever have regret, or the checks cashed and he's good?
Because I think the checks cashed and he was good with it. I think that the difficult thing for him was that he couldn't get the Miami players here when he wanted to get them in the draft. He ended up getting Winslow, of course.
Yeah.
But the guy he really wanted that year, he wanted Sean Taylor. Mm-hmm. And Sean Taylor was gone then to Washington.
Yep.
And then he took Winslow. But when he saw people like Dan Morgan and the big offensive Mount McKinley, remember the big left tackle?
Yeah, Bryant McKinney.
Yeah, Bryant. When he saw those players going off the board and he couldn't get them and recruit them, okay, he just couldn't get over that. You know, that was the unfairness he thought of the NFL. I mean, these players love me. Why can't I just get them? You know, well, there's a pecking order.
That's the way it goes.
Maybe you can get one of them.
The crazy thing was, didn't they took William Green and because Portis was on the board, wasn't he?
He was
in that draft, so they could have taken Portis.
Yeah, I think William Green went like 16th or 17th.
And Portis
that year
was
with
a second round pick,
I believe.
Remember
he was. Yeah.
And he was a stud.
Yeah,
yeah. So no, that was always Urban's thing. He's like, you knew it was going to be a miss right away because it's like, I can't buy my own groceries. It's the old Bill Parcells.
Yeah.
In college football, you can buy your own groceries. If you can recruit it, you can get who you want.
You could trace Butch Davis's drafting record because, I mean, Pete Garcia was here, but basically Butch was, you know, I mean, he was handpicked to come from Miami with Butch. Yeah. So anyway, you could trace what Butch was going to do in the draft. Either he tried to get one of his players from Miami, or he got a player that he recruited that didn't go to Miami but competed against him. And it was, you know, really, if you took a look at the biography, you
so
would always say
Boston College, William Green. It was
Jeff Fain at Notre Dame. What was Jeff's second choice? Miami. Yeah.
And so, those kids he knew.
Yeah. McCown's brother, the quarterback.
Luke.
Oh, Luke. Yeah.
He drafted him because he had a heck of a game against him when he was at Miami. Was he at Louisiana Tech?
Yeah. I believe so.
And that was his pattern, Bo. It was unbelievable watching it. Gerard Warren. He recruited Gerard Warren, thought he had him. He ended up being a Gator. He went to Florida. But that was his. That was the way he did it. Could have had Richard Seymour.
That's right.
You know,
the Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, the crazy thing is if he could have – I used to do a thing around here like in the early 2010s, like if the Browns just took best available Buckeye a lot of those years, they would have been gold.
Yeah.
He could have just taken best available Hurricane.
Oh, absolutely.
And they would have been gold because those teams were just stacked.
Remember, that would drive Browns fans crazy that – they would not select Buckeye players.
Right. Right. Well, and the ones that they did.
Yeah, I mean.
Like, Trubisky was fine, but he wasn't.
Yeah, I know, but you know, just, boy,
he wasn't a second
he
rounder.
He was not the kid that you saw,
no.
You know, in the Jim Tressel, Troy Smith offense with Gonzalez and all those players.
He just didn't have that separation
the
way that some of those other guys did. All right, free agency is upon us. We'll go over some of the very latest news, some of the news from over the weekend as well. We'll get you set on where we are. Some quarterbacks. I want to get into that Kirk Cousins situation because, speaking of Buckeyes, Justin Fields appears to be going nowhere at the moment, and I think you're almost like
it's
like the game, like the game where you get up and you run around, everybody's got to have a seat that used to play as a kid.
Yeah.
There might not be any seats for Justin Fields. We'll get into that coming up next. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, be part of one of the most passionate fan base of the NFL. Join Next Gen STM, presented by Ticketmaster. Official waitlist here, Cleveland Browns, being a Next Gen STM. Best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. We did have a little bit of quarterback news. We mentioned the Baker deal, 3 years, $100 million deal in Tampa, $50 million of that guaranteed for our former quarterback. There was a trade over the weekend of another first-round pick. The Patriots and Jaguars finalizing a deal. It's going to send Mac Jones to Jacksonville for a sixth-round pick.
He was a first-round pick.
3 years ago?
Yeah, and his first year, I mean, he won the national title for Alabama. Was that against Ohio State?
Yeah. In the COVID year.
So he won the – he came in his rookie year, and they made the playoffs. Now, he stuttered late in the year, and they got murdered in the playoff game in Buffalo. Then after that, it got really funky there, and there was a real disconnect between Bill Belichick and him. And then remember what they did offensively when Josh McDaniels left.
Yeah.
They had the two defensive guys.
Matt Patricia became the offensive coordinator.
That's right, and Joe Judge.
Yeah.
And the kid really got fouled up then. And then this year was just a disaster all the way through.
Yes.
And he wasn't playing at the end of the year, so. But I thought maybe if Belichick leaving, he might get a second chance with Gerard Mayo as the head coach, and of course our guy going in, Alex Van Pelt, is the offensive coordinator. So I don't know. They have to draft a quarterback now.
I would think, and it makes you think. Like I saw over the weekend that maybe Brissett would go there, and they'll draft a quarterback at two.
Yeah,
I forget it. Are they picking two in Washington, three, or is it inverted?
New England is three.
New England's three. Is two. All right, so it'll go Caleb Williams, and then Washington will pick who they want, and then New England will pick third.
Now back there in New England, there's like a heavy push to get a quarterback, a veteran quarterback, and draft Marvin Harrison Jr.
So that's something that I said I proposed this to Z last week. Once we started, and we'll get to Cousins in a second, but once it appeared that Atlanta was not going Cousins' way, and we figured that out at the combine, that wasn't the way that they were going to go. So once that started to happen, I said, boy, if you're New England and you're not, am I sure about Jaden Daniels? I don't know. Am I sure about Drake May? I don't know. Yeah. Like, what happens if you give up now, maybe now it's a fourth round pick for Justin Fields? You bring in Fields, and then you draft Harrison three. Now you got Fields at quarterback, Harrison at receiver. That's a pretty big injection of talent
right
away.
Yeah.
And you know Fields can play. It's not like he can't play. Like, he's a different type of quarterback, obviously. But I think AVP could work with him, and he can throw the deep ball, and he certainly is very dangerous with his legs.
Right.
But I don't know. Is that something that would pass the test there?
Well, I know that there's been a great feeling back there of, hey, let's get this guy Marvin Harrison Jr. Gosh, I mean, who wouldn't mm-hmm. want him, right? I mean, he is just ready-made. He is ready to play right away. He's NFL ready. But this move over the weekend, the Mac Jones situation, I mean, leaves them. They are really empty at quarterback. I mean, Bailey Zappi.
Yeah.
I mean, they had cut him. Mm-hmm. At the start of the season, and then brought him back on the practice squad, and then at the end of the year, he was playing.
Yeah.
When they lost in Germany, they played that Germany game, Mac Jones was terrible. They brought Zappi in. He threw a horrible pick right at the end of the game, and their quarterback situation was just dismal.
Isn't it something how quickly they know?
I know. I mean,
they come off of quarterbacks, Jim.
Yeah.
I mean, you used to be, if you were a first round pick, you got 3 to 4 years to figure it out.
Sure.
I mean, now, like Fields, Mac, Mariota, so many of these guys don't – there's so many guys –
Rosen.
Rosen, Darnold.
Darnold, yeah.
Wilson with the Jets.
Sure.
There's a half dozen off the top of the head without any sort of giving it much thought that did not only didn't get to a second contract, didn't get to a fifth-year option, and were jettisoned.
Right.
They are – this league, they're making quick decisions on if a guy can play or not.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, Bo, that they don't wait anymore to play a kid typically.
No.
I mean, remember the plan here was that Mayfield was going to sit that entire year. Taylor was going to play. Baker was going to kind of watch it. And then, you could see that you had to get Mayfield in and get him to play. But, I mean, the sitting around now, it doesn't happen now. You have to you need instant intelligence and performance from these kids that come in at quarterback, and they need to go right away. And you're right. Then the decision is made pretty quickly if it's going to go badly.
Well, look at these two kids we're talking about, whether it be Mac. I mean, that's a pretty bad spot he's put in there. Mm-hmm. They don't have a lot of weapons. As you mentioned, two defensive guys calling his plays in year two after McDaniels left.
Mm-hmm.
Fields has had three different offenses in his early career with the Bears. They had next to no weapons.
And the worst game plan I have ever seen in his first start here with Matt Nagy, which was shocking because Matt Nagy right out of the Kansas City system and offense.
I've said this before on the show, so I'm not reinventing the wheel with this. It almost felt like it was proving a point. Like Nagy was proving a point. Like, you're going to make me play this kid, you watch what happens.
That's a good point.
That's what it almost felt like. Yeah. It felt like malfeasance. Like that he was putting him out there to fail. Because with what he is, to make him stand in there and just get bludgeoned by Miles over and over and over again.
Like four and a half times, wasn't it?
It was awful.
Yeah, he broke the record. Down like 8 or 9 times in the game.
Yeah, just was hit constantly. Yeah. But here's the reality on Justin Fields. And while maybe that part of it is all true, it also could be true that I was dead wrong about this. I thought that there would be a decent market for him.
I did too.
It appears to me, Jim, that if he starts next year, the only other place other than and we'll get to Cousins in a second, the only place I went through the whole league. The only place I can think of is the Raiders.
Hmm.
There's not another spot out there. You start going through the divisions. If New England is going to go young and like a Brissett type, which it feels like that's kind of where they're going to go, there's nothing in the NFC East. The AFC North is full. The AFC South is full.
Yeah.
The AFC West, it's Raiders. He's not a fit for Sean Payton with Denver.
No.
That's not what he wants.
Right.
So the Raiders are out there. In the NFC, Washington seems intent on taking a quarterback. There's nobody else in the East. They're all locked in. I assume Dan Jones stays in the Giants. The NFC South now, if Cousins goes to Atlanta, which it looks like that's going to happen, Baker's back in Tampa. There will be a job in Minnesota, but Chicago's not going to trade him within the division.
Within the division, right, yeah.
So there's nothing there. And then the NFC West, all those teams are locked up.
Right.
So is it possible that he's not going to start next year? Kind of seems like that's where we're headed.
Yeah, and I have to tell you that he is captivating, though.
I agree.
I watched him even against us late in the year. And he gave the Browns fits that day. And especially, you know, that last play when he's running around, he's heaving it down into the end zone. But his, I think that I just look at him in that athleticism that he has. He's got a great arm. And I think he's, you know, he's just been beaten up. Yeah. That is a case where there's a lot of change. It really hurts a kid like that.
Yeah.
You know, they just get beaten up, and they get beaten up mentally, and then that overtakes what they can do physically.
Yes.
You know, they just lose it all.
It's something
that's too bad.
It's probably something similar. It's funny. I was just having this conversation about Tim Couch over the weekend as an example of a guy who knows what happened. Like, just do the swap and say he goes to Philly and plays with those Andy Reid teams, and McNabb is here, and McNabb endures everything that Couch endured early on in his career here, and Couch got to play in Philly with Andy Reid in that offense in an established unit. You were here for that.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
It was bludgeoned.
He never should have gone in as quickly as they put him in. The plan was that Ty Detmer was going to quarterback them. Detmer had a rough opening game against Pittsburgh, and Couch finished the game, but, I mean, it was 43-0. And they went to Tennessee the next week, Bo, and they put him in there, and it was, you know, I don't know if Jim Schwartz was there at that point, but that Tennessee defense, Javon Kearse was there. I mean, they were loaded. I mean, they eventually went to a Super Bowl. And he just got killed in that first game. And then it just kept happening, you know. And there were times that he was brilliant. I mean, Couch could be great. He went over to Heinz Field and won on a Sunday night over there and was just tremendous. He looked like, you know, he was great. I mean, he was phenomenal. But he just physically and mentally just got beaten up. I mean, the worst time was one time, I think it was against the Ravens. It was a night game, Monday night game probably. And he got knocked out of the game with a concussion.
Mm-hmm.
And there was kind of a cheer when he was leaving. And he broke down in the locker room, you know, in front of the media after the game about, you know, how he was being treated. And that was watching a kid just come unglued. It was too bad.
Yeah, that's...
You're right, though. That's a good thought. If he had gone to Philadelphia, you know, what would have happened there?
You have that infrastructure. You draft a guy first overall, and I wasn't here at that time, obviously, but just the notion of you're an expansion team, you draft this. I mean, if the Lord was creating the perfect-looking quarterback, it's Tim Couch.
Right.
Right? He's coming from the Southern School, Kentucky, King of Kentucky, all of those things. He comes in here. He looks the part. You have an expansion team. You're trying to have some excitement because there's a business to this.
Right.
And that's the other thing that happens. That's what happened to Justin in Chicago. That happened to David Carr in Houston when they drafted him number one overall. And you get in and you're forced to play and then you just get bludgeoned. And I always give Baker a lot of credit for this because he didn't get broken because this is a lot. He was dealt early here.
Mm-hmm.
The team was much better. But he was dealt with a lot. And if you can survive it, and I think that'll be the test for a guy like Fields. Can you survive all of the things that went wrong early in your career to get through to the other side of it?
Get a clean slate.
Because oftentimes they can't.
Yeah.
You know, they can't do it.
Yeah.
We do have what looks to be official here now. Well, not official, but it's getting close. Cousins going to get a 4-year deal in Atlanta.
Wow. Boy, I'll tell you what, he has made a boatload of money, hasn't he?
Yes, he has.
And he's used it. He's used the tag very well. I mean, he's taken, you know, and ended up with a high salary on that. But I have to tell you, for a guy that has never really been in a big game, nor won a big game, he commands a great deal of money. Why do you think that is?
I think because...
I mean, can you remember, other than when he ended up kind of RG3, got hurt, and he got the Redskins into the playoffs... And, you know, he played very well, but then they got knocked right out after that.
No, I think
that it was all hatched here on a Sunday here. RG3 got hurt.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he hurt his knee, and the Browns were kind of semi in it, and Washington definitely was in it over on the NFC side. And it was Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan, and they play him. We found out Sunday morning that RG3 wasn't going to play, kind of like the Watson deal against Baltimore this year. So Cousins goes out, and Bo, they run a bootleg rollout that he kept throwing to the tight end. They must have run it 25 times, and 25 times it was complete and went for big plays. And the Browns could not stop it. They just could not stop it, and he ended up winning that game, and that kind of launched him a little bit.
Here's my theory on Cousins. That's amazing. This is my theory on it. I think there are so many
of the – you mentioned the Shanahans. There are so many of those coaches in the league. We got one here.
Yes, we do.
And what they want is for you to throw it to the guy who is open.
Simple. Yeah.
That seems so simple.
It does.
But it's schemed. There's a play that is set up that is schemed. And if they want you to throw it exactly where they want you to throw it. They don't want improvisational. That's why – and Purdy's far more than this. But that's why Kyle likes Brock Purdy more than he was ever going to like Trey Lance. It's why he probably liked – really considered Mac Jones in the draft more than he ever would have considered Justin Fields. Because what he wants is your back is to – you need to trust me. So that creates trust, right?
Yeah, right.
You're going to turn your back to the defense. This is going to look exactly like the last 16 wide zone runs, and now you're going to keep it. You're going to whip your head around. There's going to be a guy open here, and I need you to throw
it. That's right. Yeah.
And I think Cousins does that.
Yeah.
And I think that's why this has happened. It's the Shanahan tree. It's Minnesota. Minnesota's running that now with O'Connell. Like, it's the same type of stuff. They're going to run that down in Atlanta. In fact, when we were at the Combine, I was talking to Chris Rose after Z left. And Chris and I were talking, and I said, "I go, doesn't Fields feel like Atlanta? That feels like the spot. Like, Z and I have been talking about for 2 years. Like, goes back to Georgia, all that young talent. Like, he'd thrive, his home state." And he said, "No, who's the offensive coordinator there? It's Zach Robinson." Well, Zach came in under Sean McVay. What is Sean McVay's favorite person he's ever had a quarterback? Matt Stafford. Why? He throws it where it's supposed to be thrown, and he's accurate.
Yeah.
And that's what Cousins is.
Yeah.
He's really accurate.
You know, it's really amazing. The good coaches – like you were mentioning there, they get their quarterbacks to an automatic good start with an automatic play.
Yep.
When Kevin had Mayfield here, it was always a slant to Landry.
Yep.
Right away. Okay, get it going. Okay. This year, it was, no matter who it was, Watson or any of the five.
Right,
any of the five that ended up playing. Flacco the same way. It would be a 6-yard throw to Njoku. Mm-hmm. To get you into a nice second down, three, four. And Shanahan was brilliant at that.
Yes.
And, you know, Brian Hoyer had a great year that year with Shanahan here. And it was because of the running game set up, just wide open throws.
Yes.
And there it is.
No, it's it. So for what he does in Atlanta, what Cousins does in Atlanta is, to me, he makes them the best team in the NFC South. They'll win. That's an organization that is starving for any sort of success.
Man, we're so close.
Right.
Yeah.
And Arthur Blank is starving for any type of success. They've got a ton of talent everywhere else, really good young defense, incredible weaponry. And now you have a guy who will throw it where it's supposed to go. He's going to complete 70% of his passes.
You got it. There you go. Yeah.
So, to me, this makes – now, I don't know what our guy Kwesi Adofo-Mensah is going to do in Minnesota now.
I know. Yeah.
So I don't know who's even the quarterbacks on their roster.
They had a kid from BYU who they played at the end of the year.
That's right.
Yeah, and they
I can't remember how that.
I think he played. No, it didn't go well. He played against Green Bay. I remember on a Sunday night game, and he got the start. It was after the whole Dobbs situation.
Oh yeah, because Josh played well over there.
Yeah, and who's the Nick Mullins?
Nick
was
Mullins
there,
was over there.
There for a while. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I was just—I
think he was at BYU. Whoever this kid was,
Jaren Hall is his name.
Jaren Hall.
Am I right that he was at BYU?
Yeah.
He had a terrible Sunday night game.
Yeah, he did. That was not particularly good for him.
Not very good. Yeah.
Kirk Cousins is 36.
Wow.
And he got a 4-year deal. Now, who knows what's guaranteed of it, but it's a 4-year deal. Is what
great guy though, isn't he? I mean, seems like a really terrific guy. I know he did that in Minnesota. There was a huge contingent of people that really liked him. His teammates liked him. I know that he and Justin Jefferson would disagree, but that happens with a big time receiver.
Well, and
it happened in Pittsburgh
for sure.
It happened in Buffalo, you know, with Stephon Diggs. I would think, pressed to answer the question correctly, Kevin would probably say that Diggs did the same thing when he was in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
And it happens.
It happens. I think the bigger thing for Minnesota going forward is Justin Jefferson needs a contract.
Right.
He's due.
Yeah.
If you're Justin Jefferson, are you signing a contract in Minnesota not knowing who's throwing you the football?
See, that's the big thing. Yeah.
So, like, the feeling I got last week at the Combine was that they wanted to bring him back, bring Cousins back, because they've got other – they got other mouths to feed, and they got these young guys. And Kwesi even said, like, he's a blue chip, like in Jefferson. Like, we can't be like a feeder system for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
know? And so, like, if he doesn't know who's throwing it to him.
Isn't it funny, Bo, whether it's a guy looking for a coaching job in the NFL or now any player in the NFL, when they look at teams, who's the quarterback there?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you're going to be a coach going into a situation, that's why people, you know, said going into Carolina right now with Bryce Young there, you don't know, right? You know, you really don't know. But if you go into it with a team that has a – well, first of all, maybe it's the job isn't open if the quarterback's really good for a head coach.
Yeah.
You'd have to really screw it up, right?
You would.
But usually that's what a player will definitely look.
Yes.
And certainly a receiver. Who's going to be throwing it to me?
Kirk Cousins' career earnings, $231 million.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We had some interesting news on the stadium side of things over in Chicago. I want to get to that story coming up next. Keep you updated on free agency. You listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, be part of one of the most passionate fan bases in the NFL. Join Next Gen STM, presented by Ticketmaster, your official waitlist to your Cleveland Browns. Being a Next Gen STM, the best chance to become a season ticket member in future seasons. Visit clevelandbrowns.com/NextGenSTM to reserve your spot today. I saw this over the weekend out of Chicago, a major shift in the Bears. So they had bought, I want to say it's a former Arlington Heights racetrack out in Arlington in the suburbs.
Like 364 acres.
Yeah. And then there were some tax issues that hit them and that the realities of that, and they were kind of being scrambling, but they were moving out of downtown Chicago. Huge shift over the weekend. Many people reporting this, among them our friend of the program, Courtney Cronin, that the Bears plan to build a new stadium while remaining in Chicago. The franchise is going to pay $2 billion of their money to help fund a publicly owned stadium, domed stadium, first time they've done that. So it's south of Soldier Field. I've been to Chicago a handful of times. Is that like on the way towards like the museums, Jimmy? Do you have a better handle on it than I do, maybe?
Well, the museums are right there with Soldier Field.
So they're all right there.
Yeah, I mean, right so there. It's almost like the Science Center and Rock Hall here.
Okay.
It's that close.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's, but it's got to be right in that area somewhere.
In that Grant Park area.
I would think. Yeah, I would think. I don't know the geography. I apologize, folks. I don't know Chicago geography that well. But they are going to continue out in Soldier Field until this gets built. And then they will tear down the spaceship they built inside of old Soldier Field.
That is the worst.
How did they get that so wrong?
I have no idea.
A city known for its architecture.
Do you realize the radio booth, you cannot see the ball in the air because the deck comes down over the front of the booth.
The overhang.
Yeah, the overhang.
Oh, my gosh.
So they put a television screen on the facade of the overhang, and so when there's a punt or a field goal or anything like that, you can't see it. You don't know where, or a high arching pass. It was amazing. But spaceship is the right way to identify that.
Strange.
And that was a historic.
Yeah.
I mean, they maintained those pillars, but barely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I was at the old Soldier.
And then they inserted this really stadium, like you said, kind of this dish.
Mm-hmm.
Like spacecraft inside of it. It was just a bizarre way to do it.
Such a choice.
And they kept saying, well, we preserved the history. No, you really didn't.
You really
Other
don't.
Than I feel like I'm on an episode of the Jetsons.
That's it.
That was it.
Yeah, they really botched it. The thing that is amazing, though, is like Chicago has never – this is one of the major cities in the United States, obviously. With a dome, they're going to get Super Bowls. They're going to get Final Fours.
Yeah, sure.
They're going to get Big Ten Championship football games. They're going to get college football playoff games. They're going to get WrestleManias. Like all of the things that Chicago hasn't been able to do because they haven't had a venue.
Right.
Now you're back in business, baby.
Absolutely.
And you're going to get all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been playing. You think about the Big Ten football championship game in Indy for all these years. That's going to move up to Chicago sometimes. They're at least going to rotate that around. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they'll go west a little bit too. Maybe they play it in the Rose Bowl or Vegas a little bit, but they're going to definitely
go west. But
you're
right. You're talking Final Four. You're talking all kinds of events.
Chicago's never had any of that.
No.
So and
that'd be a fun
town
to go to for a Super Bowl too.
Sure.
Chicago's a great town.
It's an awesome city, and you now you're going to build a dome there. So we've had two new stadiums. Now, this one's not announced in that way. This is basically just a shift back to city. But you have the Buffalo Stadium that's being done, and that's not going to have a dome. And there's a ton of public money in that one.
Mm-hmm.
but they're not going to go a dome in Buffalo. Minnesota did a dome, and it's spectacular.
Tremendous.
That's the best.
Oh, thing. What a beautiful place.
Is that your favorite?
Of the new places, absolutely. Yeah. The day we went in there and they won and it was great too. But, I mean, aside from that, I mean, that I just couldn't believe where we were. It was fantastic. Because my first job in radio was in St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Okay.
90 miles outside of the Twin Cities. And I used to go to the Met.
Sure.
The old stadium.
You know,
with
Metrodome.
The outdoor plate.
The Met.
Yeah.
I don't have a point on that. Metrodome for you.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Where Bud Grant would show up just before the game, and you say, gosh, he's the head coach of the Vikings. What's he doing? He was out duck hunting
on
a Sunday morning.
Of course.
It was amazing.
That's what a life. That's fantastic. Still the coldest I've ever been at a football game was Ohio State in 2014 played up at Minnesota outdoors.
Oh, yeah.
In December.
In their new stadium?
In their new one.
Yeah, they have their new stadium.
And it was 14 below air temp. That's the coldest I've been. But you guys, there was one that won at Christmas.
Oh, that Christmas Eve game against the Saints.
That was
brutal. And there was a Thursday night game against Pittsburgh that Josh Cribbs ended up single-handedly winning for the Browns. And that was bitter cold.
Yeah, there's no fun in it, kids. We'll get your Griff fact of the day and so much more to come. You'll listen to Cleveland Browns Daily on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
Cleveland Browns Daily, brought to you by Ballybet, now live in Ohio on 850 ESPN Cleveland.
All right, give me the griff. What do we got?
Draymond Green has made more three-pointers in his career than Larry Bird has in 253 less games.
Oh my. People can't wrap their head around the fact that they didn't shoot threes in those days.
Yeah, that's right.
They tried to go to the rim.
It was crazy when we were looking at that. Like, we think of Bird as such a good shooter.
He was.
It just didn't take that many.
That's sacrilegious.
No, they just didn't shoot him. It is. It's funny. I just popped up on one of my social channels. 10 years ago today, I was at the Big Ten Championship game in Indy.
Yeah.
And it was Ohio State basketball against Michigan State and Draymond Green.
Wow.
So it's interesting that you guys had that as your Griff fact of the day. This has been a great pleasure, sir.
Hey, I had a ball. That's 2 hours that whipped by.
Swiss fly, buddy. Always does when you're here. The great voice, Jim Donovan. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The next level is coming up next. Thanks for listening, buddy. Cleveland Browns Daily, 850 ESPN Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and 850 ESPN Cleveland.